You want to get your Bibles and turn to 2 Kings chapter 4 is where we're going to be this morning. And we've looked at, three men? Can't remember who they were, Aaron and Caleb. And we looked at Jehu last week, and I figured we better look at a woman lest I be accused of something very bad. So I thought we'd look at least one woman this quarter, so call me generous, or we might get to two, but here's a woman that we don't know her name. The Bible doesn't tell us her name. She's a woman from Shunem, and that's about all we know as far as her origin, and we won't spend time trying to learn more there, but I think there's a lot of lessons that we can learn from this woman, and this is, you know, usually if you have a ladies' class, you'll spend time talking about ladies in the Bible and make application from those things. But I think there's some lessons that all of us can learn, men and women alike, from this lady from Shunem. So 2 Kings chapter 4 is all that we know about her. You start in about verse 8 and you get down to the end of the chapter. And this is what we know about this Shunammite woman. And as you look at this chapter, if there's any characteristic, and we're going to notice 8 characteristics of this woman this morning, but really the first one is one that overall we see as that which stands out about this woman, that she is devoted to God. She's devoted to truth. If there's anything that's remarkable about her in any way, we're going to talk about her hospitality and generosity and all of those kind of things. But when you begin to see how devoted she was to the truth, that she lived in a nation. We talked last week about this northern kingdom of Israel, and how there was not a single righteous king in all the history of this nation after it was divided. And so when you begin to see that here's this nation that was in all respects a very godless, unrighteous, ungodly nation, we think, well, everybody there must have been that way. And we read about Elijah and Elisha and all of their battles that they had with Ahab and with the other kings and with all of those who were in power. And we think, wow, look at this godless nation. There's nobody in this nation that wants to do right. Well, then you get to some chapters like 2 Kings 4 and you learn that even in the midst of this nation that's gone after idolatry, even in the midst of this nation, 2 Kings chapter 4, you're in a time period where Baal worship was very dominant. Ahab had brought Baal worship into existence, and here they are worshiping Baal. Before Ahab had done that, Jeroboam had set up idols in Dan and Bethel in the north and south southern parts of this nation, so that God's people could go to those two cities and worship these idols. I mean, you look at this, the idolatrous nature of this nation, and yet here you find this one woman who is devoted as much as anybody could be to serving God. And you see that in her devotion to Elisha the prophet. And these are just some things in overview. We're going to talk about these in more detail, but you see how she cared about the prophet. You see, you read 2 Kings chapter 4, and I think it's in verse 8, at least in this particular part of the story, at least in verse 8 and maybe down in verse 17, there's not many times that you read the name Elisha. And I might prove myself wrong because there it is in verse 32 again. You see his name. But I don't remember his name being in here as much as I just remember him being called the man of God, is how he's described in 2 Kings chapter 4. That's how she refers to him. She doesn't call him Elisha. She just calls him man of God. And that's she recognized who he was, recognized the position that he had as the prophet of God, and she respected the position that he had as the prophet of God. Prophets in the Old Testament, were prophets in the Old Testament, are they different than preachers today? Are they similar to preachers today?
Yes.
Okay, similar, yes. Different?
Yes.
How are they different? God doesn't talk to preachers today directly? Preachers today are seldom Murdered, yes. I didn't understand that word, and I didn't want to speculate. God doesn't speak directly to preachers. That's what Emily first said. She said, preachers are not murdered for today, at least in this nation, in large part. How else are they different?
They can't prophesy.
Who can't prophesy? Preachers?
Today.
What? Why were these men called prophets? They're spokesmen for God. Is not a preacher today a spokesman for God?
In a different way.
How in a different way?
The Spirit came in the Word.
He's doing it from a book.
Today he's doing it from a book.
Yes.
What book was Elisha using?
God.
The Spirit of God was the one that was directing him where to go and what to say. Is that different? When this woman looked at the prophet, she saw the authority and the mouthpiece of God. She saw this in a man. And what did she do? She had tremendous respect for him because of who he was and because of what he was doing. And so she went out of her way to help truth, to promote truth, to further truth, to do all she could to hold on to Elisha, who to her was this. She learned about God, knew about God because of a prophet of God. And so it's no wonder that you see this woman, or that you would see anyone, hopefully even more than just this one in this nation, who was devoted to the prophets. You know, we look at the prophets and we've got to recognize, yes, they were the quote unquote preachers of the Old Testament and the New Testament, but it was a completely different role. Say again?
They were a manifestation of God.
Okay. They were that which was manifesting the God Himself, His nature, His Word. It's how people were learning of God. And we've got to have a respect for who these men were and the role that they played, just as they did in the Old Testament. And so you'll begin to see as you read about this woman that God was the focus of her life. And not just the focus, He was the measure. Everything she did was measured by God. Okay, seven characteristics. This is the main one, and every other one kind of falls underneath it. She's devoted to truth, and you see that in the fact that she was very hospitable. Look in verse 8, 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 8. Happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman, or King James says a great woman, or is there a prominent woman? Is that New American Standard say prominent? A notable, here's a great woman in this city of Shunem. She persuaded Elisha, persuaded him to eat some food. Have you found preachers to be difficult people to feed? Here comes this preacher, and you look in verse 8, so it was as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And then we're jumping ahead, but the end of verse 9, she recognizes that he passes here regularly. So here's this woman who sees this prophet, this man of God, coming to town, coming through town a lot. And what does she do in verse 8? Don't jump ahead to verse 9. What does she do in verse 8? Does she invite him in to eat? It's even more than that. It's not just, hey, would you like to come get something to eat? It is, hey, you would like to come get something to eat in my house. What does it say? Persuaded him? I mean, it wasn't just, hey, would you like to come over and eat? No. Oh, good. Okay. I just wanted to ask, you know. Have you ever done that? Just ask somebody to come over to eat and you hope maybe they won't say yes so that you don't have to clean up the house? You know, you just want to be, you want to show yourself to be kind. Here she is, grabbing him by the arm. Sorry, Mike, forgot about your shoulder. Grabbing him by the arm and persuading him, you want to come to my house to eat. Did she do it just once? No. Every time he came to town, like a good preacher, he understood that that's where he was going to stop and eat. That's where that free meal was, and he knew where it was. He understood she wanted to provide a meal for him. Think about Think about this in relationship to us. Now, I'm not talking about preachers. I'm talking about people in general. The word hospitable, at least the Greek word hospitable in the New Testament, means lover of strangers. See, we think hospitable means I invite people in that I know and that I love. Hospitable is more than just I know and I love them. The word literally means lover of strangers. What does that mean? I'll even accept people into my house that I don't know so well. You go and you look at Gaius in 3 John and see how he was accepting missionaries into his home that he didn't even know. He only accepted them because John was the one sending them. And so here's a woman who sees a need. She sees this man coming to town, and what is she going to do? She's going to find whatever she has the capacity to do. Could she feed him every time he came to town? Is there a need for hospitality today? We look at the qualifications of elders. Is there a qualification for elders to be hospitable? Are they the only ones who have that responsibility? No. Look in 1 Peter. We won't look at all these verses, but just look in 1 Peter chapter 4. Here's, and I want us to see 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse, what is it, verse 4 or verse 9? It's close to there. You can find it. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9. I want us to look at it just for the last two words. Be hospitable, those are the first two words, to one another without what?
Grumbling.
Without grumbling. Is that this lady's spirit? Yeah. She's not doing it because she has to. She's doing it because she wants to. And the New Testament says here's a qualification for an elder, 1 Peter 3 and Titus 1, is to be hospitable. Is 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9 written to elders? Well, yes. Is it written only to elders? No. Do we all have a responsibility to be hospitable to one another? Yeah. In your mind, when was the last time you were hospitable toward anyone, but specifically towards your brethren? When was the last time that you showed hospitality? I said in your mind. Some people said yesterday. Some of you could say yesterday or last week. Some of you might have to say, well, maybe last month, or maybe last year. Some of us might have to say last century. When was the last time that we were hospitable? What does hospitality do? And these are just a few things. Does it promote increased love among the brethren? Does it show a genuine interest in people? Does it help me to get the focus off of me and put the focus on somebody else? And hospitality does all of these things. And there's some of us who are better at it than others. But does that mean if somebody's better at it than I am, that I shouldn't do it? You know, hospitality comes in all sorts of forms. We think about hospitality being limited to just having somebody in my home and feeding them. Is it more than that? There's another characteristic of this woman that's very close to this idea of hospitality, but it gets beyond that. But what does she do? Beyond having him into her home to eat, what else does this lady do? Dirk? Yeah. It's one thing to have somebody over in your house to eat, say, every time they come to town, right? Is it a whole nother thing in verse 9 to go to your husband? Notice what she says. What's the word after let? Us. That's almost like let you, right? You know, when a wife comes to you and says, let us do this, it's almost like let you do this, right? Here's an idea and you need to fulfill it. But she says, let us, verse 10, make a small upper room on the wall. Why? This guy's coming to town. Not only am I going to compel him and persuade him to come into my house every time he's in town to eat, now I'm going to go beyond that. Now I'm going to go to my husband and say, look, I know that, verse 9, I know that this is a holy man of God. what am I going to do about it? He passes by this way all the time. He doesn't have a place to stay. Here's this woman, and through her generosity, wants to add a room onto her house. Is that a step beyond hospitality? I mean, is that a step beyond, hey, you want to come over for dinner? That here she sees an opportunity to help this guy out. Does Elisha need a meal? Sure, he needs a meal. Does he need a place to stay? Does she have the means by which to fulfill that need? You think about this and we say, oh, that, you know, that would never happen today. Why wouldn't it happen today? I mean, what did this lady have that we don't? What means did she have that we don't? You know, we and there's nothing wrong with this either, but we have somebody to come to town and we think, well, I'm going to put them up in a hotel before I'm going to have them in my house. Why? Because it's a lot easier to pay $70 for a hotel than have somebody stay in my home and mess up my towels and mess up my, you know, then I got to clean up after them. And I'll just pay, you know, whatever dollars it is to have them in a hotel. Then they're out of my hair. Man, that's not this lady. This lady says, you're going to eat at my house. Now, you're not just going to eat at my house. You're going to stay at my house. I'm going to build this room. Was she a steward of the things of God? Remember what we said at the very first point. She was devoted to God. She's devoted to truth. Does she have the means by which to build another room? I'm not saying this lady's rich. I mean, there's no indication that she's rich. Her house doesn't have any extra rooms in it, does it? I mean, apparently not. She doesn't just have a spare bedroom sitting there. She doesn't have a house big enough for him to stay in. She's got to add to it. Although he does, they apparently do have some servants. And so perhaps they're well enough off to have helpers and servants around. But there's no indication that they're just rich folks. But she sees that she has these things from God. That she has a place big enough on this wall to add an extra room. And she's going to do it. She's going to be generous enough to do this. Why? To be showy? Well, that's one of our next points. But to be showy about it? No. To say, look at me? So that everybody else in the city will say, wow, look at that lady. No, she's doing it because she's devoted to truth. She's devoted to God, and she'll do whatever she can to further the truth. Number four. She's a self-starter. What does that mean? Who told her to build this room? Who told her to have the prophet of God in to have meals? I mean, did somebody come along, you know, from the local synagogue and say, hey, you know, it'd be a really good idea if you'd build an extra room for this guy because he needs a place to stay? She's a self-starter. She sees a need. And instead of waiting to be asked by somebody to fulfill it, she goes to her husband and says, hey, here's something we need to do. Let's do it. Think about the initiative that had to take. Because sometimes we are waiting around for somebody to ask us to do something. You feel that way sometimes? Well, I don't know that I really want to get involved. I'll just wait and see if they need any help. This is not true, but a hurricane is on the way. That's a general statement. As far as I know, there's anybody know? I haven't looked at the weather in months. There's not a hurricane on the way. But here's a hurricane on the way. Well, I don't know if they need help. You know, they'll call me if they need help putting up their shutters. Really? Do you know many people who have a need and they'll actually pick up the phone and call you? There's some.
No.
But there's not a lot. Do you know people who would not ask you for help, but you know they need help?
Yes.
Yeah. Why is it that sometimes we have to wait to be asked to do something? Well, I'll just, you know, I'll wait and I'll wait and see if the elders make an announcement. I don't know if they really want somebody to do that or not. What happened to having an initiative? To say, I'm devoted to God, I am devoted to truth. Here is a need that I see. I don't know what that need is. You know, that need could be a need that a member has. A need that a member has for whatever. And instead of waiting, you take the initiative. You be a self-starter and you go to that person and say, what can I do? You ever called somebody and say, well, call me if you need anything. I say that a lot. I feel bad every time I say it because I know they're not going to call me. Instead, why don't we call somebody or go to their house and say, okay, I'm here. I'm going to do this for you. And the tendency of the person on the receiving end is what? Oh, no, I don't need anything. Not only do we need to be a self-starter, not only do we need to be generous, we also need to be gracious on the receiving end. Not in some way where we are proud or some way where we are arrogant about anything, but we need to be self-starters in helping others. If you see something that needs done around the church building, I mean, you pull in the parking lot and boy, somebody needs to paint that. Somebody needs to clean that. You go in the bathroom and there's paper all over the floor. Somebody needs to come in here and clean up this paper on the floor. Why do we wait to be asked sometimes to do things? Are there needs that our brothers and sisters in Christ have that we can help to meet? It goes back to the idea of being generous, and that is, it doesn't matter how much we have. It's not a matter of you know, I've got more money there. I don't have as much money as somebody else, so I can't do as much. Generosity is not about how much you have. Generosity is not about how rich you are. Generosity is a condition of the heart. And anybody have any comments about that? I want us to look at something in a second. I think I skipped right over it. On that last slide about generous. Anything anybody wants to add to that? Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. I think I skipped over this. It was on the last slide. Didn't look at it. We talked about this briefly in our introduction to the book of Titus on Wednesday night. But just to help us see that generosity is not about what you have. And I'm not rich enough to do anything. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in great trial of affliction, here's this church, the churches of Macedonia, in great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering of the saints. And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. How rich were the brethren in Macedonia? This says they're in deep poverty. And yet what did they do? Their gift to Paul abounded in liberality. You know, here's some brethren who didn't have anything, and they could have said, well, we'll let everybody else take care of this. We really can't afford to. No. They sent this gift, and then it also adds, they implored us to receive it. You know, I read that, and I think, here they are sending it, and they're saying, take this, don't send it back. Don't feel sorry for us. Don't think we need it. Take it. We want you to have it. Do we have that kind of spirit? Again, it's not a matter of an amount. It's a condition of the heart. Number five, we got to get moving. We got four more to get. She was practical in her approach. Notice that when she says, let's build him a room, does she say, let's build him a suite? You know, let's stick a jacuzzi in there. Let's stick a laptop in there. I think jacuzzi and laptop would have been interesting words for them to learn. You know, back then, it's like, oh, yeah, that'd be fun. What does she want to build? She wants to build a little chamber. And what does she want to put in there? A bed? A table? What would be nice to have with a table? A chair? And a lampstand. What else does she want to put in there? That's it. This is her generosity, her gift. It's not elaborate. It's practical. Here's this guy. He comes to town all the time. What does he need? First thing she recognizes he needs something to eat. What does she do? Hey, I want to feed this guy. Then she starts to recognize, this guy needs a place to stay. Well, I'm going to give him a place to stay. What kind of place? A little place. All he needs is a bed, and he needs a table where he can sit and meditate on the Word of God. That's all this guy needs, and that's what I'll give him. Her approach was very practical. Not elaborate, not just lavish, and that's what we've got to understand, is we don't have to be lavish in helping other people. We don't have to just be overflowing in our gifts. Practical, easy things that we can be of service to somebody else. You know, we think we've got to keep up with our times and have all of these exciting things and all of these technological things. What are some easy and practical things that we can do for people that aren't going to cost us any money? Easy, practical things you can do for your brethren that aren't going to cost you a whole lot of money. You think of any? Call them. Y'all got free local calls? Everybody got that on your phone system? Probably. What else can you do? You can send a letter. That'll cost you 41 cents. But I think most of us could probably, if you believe postage is 41 cents, is that like crazy? What else can you do that's not lavish but practical and easy and will help somebody else? Pat? I can't repeat everything Pat said. Those over here hopefully heard it. But she's talking about the fact that we need to open ourselves up to the point that we're ready to accept people. That we have an openness about our relationship, an openness about our home. You know, sometimes somebody calls and says, hey, I'm going to drop by, and you think, can you wait like half an hour and let me clean up the house? Pat's saying we need to have an openness that we don't care what thing you need. And if we have an openness about our relationship, then will people want to come by? You know, she talks about the fact we've got busy schedules, and we do. But the early church, did they spend time together? Yes. Did they spend time together in each other's homes frequently? Yes. Why? Because they had the most important thing on earth in common. And they were trying to grow closer to God and grow closer to each other, so they spent time together. Brethren, if we'll be hospitable, if we'll be generous, if we'll be the self-starter that goes out and doesn't wait for some kind of program to be put together where we start inviting people into our homes, we just start doing it. We start meeting needs. We start finding areas we can help. And it can be practical. You know, sometimes we have people into our homes for dinner and we think we got to get out the good china and we got to get out, we got to have a lavish meal. You know, what's wrong with having people over for Sloppy Joe's or hot dogs? Anything wrong with that? Fine with me. When we used to have the teens over to our house, guess what? We fed them. You know, we didn't have filet mignon when those teens came over. We did it. If you went to Lonnie's house, you had steak and potatoes at those Devos and they spoiled them. You know, can you believe that? They gave steak and potatoes to the teens when they came over for Devos. We had Sloppy Joes, okay? You know, can you be practical in your approach with generosity, with hospitality? Yes. Three more, we're going to get stuck. Was she content? Was she humble? When Elisha comes to her in verse 12, he wants to repay her. He says to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite woman in verse 12. She stood before him, and he said to her in verse 13, he says to Gehazi to say to her, "Look, you have been concerned for us with all this care." What does that say about Elisha? Do you think he's deserving of all this? Does it say that, you know, finally somebody's doing something for me? What does he recognize? "Lady, you've been doing a lot for us. We don't deserve this. You've been concerned about us with all this care. What can I do for you?" Think about that. When was the last time you said that to somebody because of what they had done? "Do you want me to speak on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army?" I mean, here's Elisha, and did he have the right to go to the king or the commander of the army? Was he in a position to do that? Yes. So here's Elisha, and basically he can get for this woman whatever she wants. Now, if somebody came to you and asked you that, I mean, how would you respond? Yeah. You know, when you go to the president, can you ask him to do this? You know, when you go, "Oh, yes, you're friends with Donald Trump." Well, when you're over there, see if he's got a few bucks to spare. You know, we think, "Yes, please help me. Do something for me." What does this woman say? What does she say at the end of verse 13? "I'm fine where I am. I'm okay. I don't need any special favors from the king." In fact, when you begin to look at this woman, when Elisha wants to reward her for her kindnesses, she doesn't want anything from the king. Rest of the nation would have. You know, but here's an idolatrous king. She's not interested in what he's got to offer. What she's interested in is what the prophet has to offer. That's all she's concerned about, is listening to the prophets and living and obeying God. That's all she's concerned about. She's not concerned about what everybody else is like, just seeing what I can get. She's meeting her needs. She's looking after the man of God. She's devoted herself to truth. And she's making sure that even in the midst of this ungodly nation, that she is trying to live right and do right. Is this woman different than everybody else that's there? There's a word that says that we're to be holy, to be set apart. Emily? Well, it's interesting that for whatever reason this relationship that he has with Gehazi, not only here, but when she goes to meet Elisha after her son dies, what does Elisha do but send out Gehazi and say, "Go and ask her, is all well?" I don't know everything that's involved in that relationship. Here's the prophet of God. Does he have a lot going on? Does he have responsibilities? You know, here's the prophet of God. Is he in communion with God a lot? Probably. I don't know everything that's involved there. I don't think that, you know, we would think today that's a rude thing to do. It was not necessarily a rude approach by any means. It was just the custom, I think, of the time. But somebody say something. But here's a woman who's set apart, different. She's contented. She trusted in God. But look at her faith. Look at her tremendous faith when her son dies. When Elisha says, "Can I give you something from the king?" She says, "No, I'm fine." And so a time after, he calls her back. After Gehazi tells her that she doesn't have a son in verse 14, he calls her back and says, "Okay, you don't have a son." So he tells her in verse 16, or verse 15, where is it? Verse 16, "About this time next year, you shall embrace a son." Had she asked for a son? How did he know that she wanted a son? I mean, it's one of these things, again, Emily, that, you know, if somebody, you know, Lorena, if a prophet of God came to you and said, "This time next year, Lorena, you're gonna have a baby son," you'd be like, "No thanks." You know, it'd be like, "Okay, that's great. That'd be kind. That's a loving thing to do, but no thanks." Does this woman want a son? She had no son. If you did not have children or didn't have the ability to have children in those days, how was that looked upon?
Something's wrong.
Woman, you'll have a son. What does she say? Man of God, don't lie to me. She knew he was a prophet. She respected his position, respected him as the mouthpiece and the authority of God. But she says, look, don't play with me. Do I want a son? Yes. Have we tried to have a son? You know, you go through the whole thing. And in her mind, she's like, don't play with me. What's wrong with old husband? Her husband is old. Her husband is old too. The woman, verse 17, conceived, bore a son when it was the appointed time, as Elisha had told her. And the child, verse 18, grew. It happened one day that he went out to his father's, to the reapers, and he said, my head, my head. So husbands, whenever your child comes to you who's sick, what do? Go to your mother. So that's what happens in verse 19. My head, my head. So he said to his servant, carry him to his mother. We've got biblical precedent here that says if your child comes to you and is not feeling well, go to your mother, all right? You got book, chapter, and verse for it, okay? Anyway, go to your mother. Y'all didn't know that was here, do you? If we'll get in and just slow down when we read, all right? Anyway, goes to his mother and he dies. This son, she didn't ask for, that was given to her by God, dies. What does she do with him? I want you to look at this lady's faith. And there's more in this story than what's up here. She takes her son and she puts her son on the prophet's bed. I don't know what that means, but I think that's interesting. She didn't go put that child in that child's bed. Didn't go put the child in her bed. Where does she take him? Takes him to the prophet's bed. Lays him in the prophet's bed, and the Bible says she closes the door. Puts him on the prophet's bed. She goes to her husband and says, get the servants to get me a team. I'm going to find the prophet of God. And he says, what? It's not a new moon. It's not a Sabbath. Why are you going there? I'm going to the prophet of God. Going to the man of God. So she gets this chariot together. She is going in person to find the prophet of God. She's not going to go to the king, not going to go to the physician, not going to go to somebody else. She's not going to send somebody else. She's going to find him, to talk to him about this. She gets in the chariot, tells the driver to drive as fast as he could. Be good if she had Jehu as her driver, right? What do we know about Jehu? Drives furiously. Maybe she didn't want furiously. Maybe she wanted safe, but fast. So when her husband asks her what's wrong, you see this up in verse 23-ish? Why are you going to him? And she said, it is well. What's up with that? Her son's dead. Why it is well? Gehazi comes out to her in verse 26. Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child? She answers, it is well. Is she a liar? She lied to her husband. Now she lies to Gehazi. Is that what's going on here? Folks, this is faith. And it's faith in her heart that says, I had a son. How did I have a son? Was it a miracle? Yeah. Now this son has died. What does her faith tell her to do? Go to the man of God who promised her this son to begin with. So she goes to this man of God, and all the while she's saying, it is well. How is she able to say it is well? She's got faith that this is going to be taken care of. Gehazi comes out to talk to her. She goes right past Gehazi, goes right to the prophet. And so the prophet Elisha sends Gehazi ahead of them. She tells him in verse 30, she tells the prophet, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, I will not leave you. And she didn't. She earlier up in verse 27, she came to him and she grabbed a hold of his feet. I think that's interesting. I think that shows her humility. She grabs a hold of his feet. She's in distress. She says, I'm not going to leave you. They get back to her house. And you get into verse 33. Verse 32, Elisha came into the house. There was the child lying dead on his bed. He went in, therefore, shut the door behind the two of them. Who's the two of them? You got Elisha in the room. Who's the other one? Well, if you go back up to verse 30, what did she say? I'm not going to leave you, buddy. He closes the door behind the two of them, Elisha and this Shunammite woman. and they prayed to the Lord. And the son is raised from the dead. You think about the faith that that woman had to begin with. Now you think about her faith after her son is brought to her. Was she justified in the trust and the devotion that she put in God to begin with?
Yes.
It's shown through her generosity, through her hospitality. And I think you see her devotion when you see how appreciative she is. She falls down at the prophet's feet. She acknowledges with sincere gratitude all that had come about because of him and because of what he was able to do. I know the bell's rung, but you think about this woman. What do we have on this woman? We've got 30 verses in the Bible. We've noticed 8 things about her, and I think we could add even more to that. But you go to the Old Testament. Are there lessons for us to learn from the Old Testament? Folks, do we need to be more devoted to God? Do we need to be more hospitable, more generous? Do we need to be that self-starter? Do we need to be somebody who is so devoted to God that we're willing to do all of these things, to be content with the things that we have, and then be able to use as a steward of God the things that we have for God? I think we can go there and learn a lot, and I hope we'll do that and continue to make application. We're going to take a break for just a moment, begin our worship in just a few minutes.